Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome back. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman today. I am joined in studio by Fred Jackson, News Director for American Family News and One News Now, and now Steve Jordahl, reporter and news anchor for American Family News. Good morning slash good afternoon, Steve.
Good morning slash good afternoon, as it applies to you.
We do have some listeners in the Eastern time zone, so we realize it is afternoon. By the way, just made me think of something there with regards to daylight savings time. Either you guys have an opinion about whether we should just drop it or continue the rather confusing twice a year.
I vote to drop it.
Drop it and just maintain the...
What good is it?
Right.
You know, honestly, I understand the genesis of the thing. It was to help farmers. That was part of it.
Okay.
But, you know...
Who cares about farmers?
I still care about farmers. But, the reality is a lot of farms in this country are now run by big business.
Right.
And quite frankly, if it's a farm with cattle, the cattle don't care when the sun does.
Right.
It drives the chickens crazy. But no, I just, especially on the spring forward.
Yeah.
Now the fall one's not bad.
Right.
You know, you fall back, you get an extra hour of sleep. But this spring and forward thing, you know, and
it's for the bids.
It's for the bids.
Do they have daylight savings time in Canada?
No, we don't have any time in Canada. Yeah,
I don't know if you do the same thing in Canada that you
I think Arizona does not have.
Arizona does not.
No.
I'm in favor. Actually, I want to ditch the spring one, but I want to keep the fall one. So, I think we're just falling back. Pretty soon
once
I get a whole new day.
I'm with Fred. I don't like it. I don't think it serves any purpose. And I didn't know it was originally to help farmers. I thought it was during the energy crisis in the 70s.
Oh, no, it was well before that.
Well before that. Okay, yeah. I didn't know that.
I think it had something to do with planting seasons and that kind of thing. I read that a long time ago.
They want
to
give kids who have to go to school and come home and help their families plant and farm. It gives them more daylight to do that.
Yeah. Hmm. Okay. It was an agrarian thing.
All right. We're not an agrarian culture anymore. I'm in favor of ditching it.
You got a lot of people along with you. I don't have a strong opinion either way.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you're kind of wishing
now that I well yeah, now that I have a smartphone that actually changes the time for me. So when I set my alarm for like Sunday morning, I got to be at churches, teach Sunday school and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for that, you know, my dad was a pastor, right? And we used to do a sunrise service on Easter occasionally. And one Easter, my dad was supposed to speak at the sunrise service, and it was on daylight savings time, and he forgot. So he was an hour late to the the Easter sunrise service because of daylight savings time. So that's how I remember which way you gain or lose. I remember because it was Easter. So if it's Easter and you're late, that means you lose an hour.
I'm totally confused. See, and to my point, I'm totally confused about this. I have no idea what you just said. I just know your dad was late.
My dad was late. So if it's Easter or spring, because Easter's in the spring, that means that if I miss it, I'm late. If it's in the fall, I'm trying to get us to move on.
I'm trying to get us to move on because
you're going to just have to say move on, Steve. Because apparently,
our
I'm
listeners
stuck
are
on
going.
This.
I'm confused about what Steve is saying.
I'm stuck on this.
All right, let's get back to news. Anyway, I thought about that when I was talking about Eastern time zone, and that's the way my mind works. I could be off on another topic here shortly. So let's go to the news.
Okay. Hey, we always talk about the Democrats kind of a step too far and eating themselves, and you know all these policies that. Well, in the latest sign. All the candidacies, the parties, the campaigns, now say they are going to let their workers unionize. This is the Democratic campaigns. So we have Bernie Sanders, who's the first, who says his people will join the United Food and Commerce Workers Local 400. Mayor Julian Castro says that he's okay with his people to unionize, and Beto O'Rourke says if his campaign wants to organize, he would support it all the way. They're going to get living wages. They're going to get health care and all this kind of stuff. But what happens, you know, campaign, especially toward the end of the campaign season, they start working long hours.
Right.
Now the campaign is going to have to pay them time and a half.
Yes, and there are some unions that limit the working hours.
Right.
And I'm not sure if you can then pay time and a half, or if you have to say no, you have to send them home. I'm not sure how that works. By the way, you said Julio Castro is he run the former San Antonio mayor?
Julian Castro.
Is he running for president? He's announced.
He is.
Okay. All right. I didn't know that.
Yes. So
hard keeping up with all of them.
Yeah, it is. But anyway, if they strike, what does that mean? Vote for somebody else?
I just see somebody outside Beto O'Rourke's. You know, we're on strike.
Right.
Down with Beto.
Down with Beto.
Yeah.
Eat dirt, Beto. That's according to a story from the last hour where Beto O'Rourke admitted, or I guess bragged about the fact, after he lost the Senate campaign against Ted Cruz, he actually ate New Mexico dirt because he believed it had regenerative powers.
Yeah.
So he seems like a new age snowflake.
You say that word like you have dirt in your mouth.
I've struggled with it all day. So anyway, what's your next story?
Let's talk about a Supreme Court ruling that just came out yesterday. And it ruled in favor of the Trump administration by deciding federal officials can detain immigrants at any time for possible deportation after they've served time in the U.S. for another crime. This goes to the sanctuary city policies that we're seeing, where local cities say they do not have to notify ICE that somebody who has committed oftentimes a violent crime is getting out of prison. And because these people don't like ICE or deportations, they're all for illegal aliens, they don't notify ICE, and these people go back on the street to often commit other crimes when they are due to be deported. Well, the Supreme Court said that it rejected an argument from lawyers saying that they are subject to mandatory detention only if they're arrested on the day they walk out of jail. So basically, at any time, ICE can – this. They were arguing this because – saying that you can only get them the day they walk out of jail. If they walk out of jail and they're more than a day on the street, then you have to pull them back in and have a whole nother deportation hearing is what the people were saying. And the Supreme Court said, no, if they've been ordered deported once, that's good enough. So it's a win for the Trump administration.
But this does not address the issue of whether or not sanctuary cities must inform ICE. Right? ICE has to keep up with these people themselves.
I'm a little unclear. I believe you're right. And I asked Abe on the way out here as he was leaving from this first hour. And he wasn't familiar with the case yet. So we'll figure that out. But I don't think it says they have to. It just says that that you can expedite the process of getting someone out of the country. If once they have been ruled that they need to be deported, they don't have to go through a whole other hearing. Just because they've been released from a
to the point, Fred, of the border wall, this goes back to the reason why we need a border wall and we need to lock down that border so we know who's coming in and out. Because while this is a win for the Trump administration and you have a criminal who gets out of local jail and then or prison and they get deported, if you don't have control of that border, they can slip right back across that border and then go on to commit additional crimes, right?
Well, and this is why the president says what we first have to do is secure our border. But we also, and he keeps saying this, and it kind of gets lost in the whole border wall funding thing, we need major, major reformation on our immigration laws in general.
Right.
There is another story out today in kind of connection with the whole idea of illegal immigration in this country from Conservative Review. And it says, according to new data obtained by the Immigration Reform Law Institute, by a FOIA request, Freedom of Information, there are now 644,488 illegal aliens remaining in our country who have already been served final deportation orders. And those are just from the top four countries, and they named them El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, and Mexico. In addition to that, there are roughly 1.1 million others from those four countries who have pending final orders and are close to receiving deportation orders. Do the math on this, and you're talking 1.7 million illegal immigrants. They've already been through the deportation system and been deemed deportable, but they're still out there. They're not showing up. This is such a broken system, and it goes back many administrations. We've talked about this before. administrations, Republican and Democrat, who have failed to do with this. We have a mess on our hands right now. We got about 11 million, they say, of illegals living in this country. The Democrats want them all to stay.
Right.
The Republicans are saying, no, we have to secure our border. We'll have to deal somehow with all these illegals. But I was just blown away. These are people who have been deemed, we're going to send you back because of crimes that you've committed, and they're still sitting here in this country.
Well, why should they show up for deportation? They're here illegally.
Yes.
They already know they've broken laws. So why should they follow this court order to show up so they can be deported? I mean, they've already demonstrated a willingness to break laws to get in and break laws to stay here. Why would they show up for deportation just because they're ordered to do so by a court?
Yeah.
Now, this makes no sense. To your point, it's a broken system.
The worst thing that could happen, ICE catches them, ICE deports them. So that's the same thing that was going to happen if they show up.
Yes.
Parents often take a great pains in trying to set their kids up for success, and Christian parents often, part of that plan is to send their kids to Christian colleges. I'm here to tell you that there is a battle going on the campuses of many Christian colleges right now. They are becoming more and more attuned to the new age, to the resistance movement, to political correctness, and college administrators and teachers, even on Christian colleges, are succumbing to this. And the latest example is a college that I knew well when I was going to college in Southern California. I went to Biola University. One of our sister colleges there was Azusa Pacific University. Longtime college, started back in the 1800s. Always an evangelical, strong school, but now they have turned a corner. It started last August, before this school year started, when the students and the faculty there decided on their own that they were going to change the policy manual to allow homosexual students, openly homosexual students. Now, they kind of amended it to say, well, we think sexual intimacy should be reserved for marriage, period. So heterosexual couples and homosexual couples should not be engaging in any physical intimacy. But romantic relationships, you fall in love, you hold hands, you know, coo and coddle and study together and all of that, we can't discriminate because, you know, we can't discriminate. You just can't be a discriminatory, you know, what? Why are you kidding? So anyway, the Board of Trustees knocked that down and said, no, wait a minute. But then just this week, they came back and said, okay, we now approve that plan. So Azusa Pacific has gone over to allowing, in the name of diversity and acceptance and treating all people the same, to allow openly homosexual students on campus. I talked yesterday to the executive vice president of Azusa, David Bixby, and I do need to commend them for calling us back because I'm sure that they knew that they were not in for a softball interview, and I tried not to give him one. But so they did talk to us, and I asked him a little bit about how they're going to enforce this policy. I wanted to play a little bit of that. This is cut three, Brent.
Dave Pugh has a biblical understanding of sexual ethics, and we stand on that. So if a gay couple were to get married, I mean, that's really not part of the policy that we embrace at APU. That would be conversations we'd have to have with that couple. If there were handholding on campus, we would, like we always do, when there's something that really we don't feel like fits with our community values, we would have a gentle conversation with those students.
And if the couple persisted, would there be a point where you would say, we're going to expel you?
No, we would not move towards expulsion.
A gentle conversation, Fred, that's what it's come down to. It's the strongest response it can have.
So, gentle conversation, I have to believe is, hey, would you mind not doing that?
Right.
We prefer you not to do that, but, you know, if you can't control yourself, you just go right ahead. You know, it's... And you know what's going to happen, too. You use the example in the questioning Mr. Bixby about holding hands. Homosexuals are going to say, well, wait a minute, Jane and John over there,
right?
They're allowed to hold hands on campus. You can't discriminate against us. And guess what? They're going to win. Here's the problem. These schools have lost sight of a God who hates sin.
Right.
That's the bottom line in all of this. It's a loving God who loves sinners and offers salvation to all. But when it comes, what's happening with this, because I believe these schools are looking at the culture and they're saying the culture is really starting to hate biblical Christianity. Is there some way we can look more like the culture to get the culture to like us, to regard us as being progressive and being out on the cutting edge of things here? So let's move the bar a little bit. Now, we'll tell the public, you heard him say, we still stand on biblical principles on marriage. But in reality, they're not. They are compromising. They are giving in to the culture.
You know, you've got to, as a Christian, you have to be very careful. It really, in any endeavor, if you want to succeed, you've got to have a vision for where you want to go and what you want to accomplish, and you have to develop and maintain the steps to get there. So for a school like Azusa Pacific, you've got to have an idea of why you exist. And if you are a Christian college and you exist first and foremost to train up young people to be Christian in whatever field they're going to, they want to go into, you have to maintain the kinds of guidelines. Just like if you're an athlete, you've got to do what you got to do to get to the end of your race. And it seems to me that the pressure on a lot of Christian colleges is this. We are having a hard time getting students to come here, and so we're going to have to broaden the categories of students who can come here.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to fudge on the Christian part because we need non-Christian students in the seats paying tuition so that we can stay open. And I would sympathize with those kinds of pressures. It must be terrible to have been in existence for over whatever, 100 and something years. I think they were in 1890s or something like that.
1899, yeah.
1899. It's got to be terrible to say, hey, we're having some problems, you know, paying, you know, and staying open. So we're going to, but once you start down that road, you can no longer fulfill your goal of being explicitly Christian and upholding Christian sound doctrine. And it sounds like they're making the compromises to broaden their appeal, as Fred's talking about, and increase the number of students who will come. And it's, you know what, it's like the Boy Scouts.
Mm.
Remember the Boy Scouts
yeah.
stood firm against homosexuality for years and years,
mm-hmm.
but they were having trouble keeping, so they had to broaden it, and now look, they're on the verge of bankruptcy and insolvency. And the same thing's going to happen to these Christian schools, because Christian parents are going to say, I'm not spending way more money
yeah.
to send my kid
these
to Azusa Pacific. It's a private college. I might as well send them to a cheaper
Cal
state
Berkeley
school.
Is a state school.
Yeah, and they're going to go out of business anyway
well,
if they're not careful.
I think, and they're doubly responsible because this is a college, is a school of higher education. They've got professors and staff members who have PhDs in biblical theology and
right.
interpretation and everything. There's no excuse for them not to know what the Bible says and what the penalty is for those who decide to flaunt it.
They know.
They have to.
They know all this. They're making a calculation that this is necessary for us going forward to stay open, keep
mm-hmm.
our doors open. And what happens is if you're not faithful to God, mm-hmm. your doors are going to close anyway.
That's right.
Eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not predicting this for Azusa Pacific, but if you start down this road, you're going to have more. Let's just say this policy is going forward, going to be their policy. You'll have more homosexual students coming, more heterosexual students who have no problem shacking up and fornicating.
Mm-hmm.
And before you know it, you're going to have the displeasure of God, you know, on your campus. And you cannot appeal to God for help if you're living an unholy life.
Mm-hmm.
That goes for individuals.
Yes.
And it goes for colleges. Your first step is repentance.
Yes.
And that's what Azusa Pacific is going to have to eventually do. They're going to have to repent before God if they want God's blessing. They'll have to go back to that step.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. It could be very costly for them.
All right. What's next?
President Trump is, whether you realize it or not, because it might not be in the news a lot, but he is in full reelection mode. His 2020 campaign has spent... Listen to this. His reelection campaign has already spent nearly twice as much as the entire Democrat field combined on Facebook and Google ads. Now, his campaign manager, Brad Parscale, was his digital manager in 2016. So, of course, he knows this world and he's disposed to do it. But this sets up a very interesting dilemma for Facebook and some of the social medias who have, number one, been very anti-Trump, anti-conservative, anti-Republican, and number two, are already facing scrutiny because of what ads did in 2016 to shape the election. Now we have a candidate who's running ads to shape the election. So it's going to be interesting to see how that works out for them.
Well, I think the operative word here is money. These social media outlets like the money, like everything else. And I think they'll continue to take the money from the Trump campaign because he's probably spending millions and millions of dollars already.
Well, and if they don't, if there's some shenanigans that go on about, no, we're not playing those ads, that just makes Trump stronger.
Yes.
Because next speech, mm-hmm. you know, stump speech, he's going to mention, well, Facebook, Google, they did this. Mm-hmm. You know, these are these leftists, mm-hmm. and it just makes them stronger. So they might as well take the money.
Take the money and run.
All right.
Well, let's just end like this. Ed, you have missed the boat. I'm sorry to say that time has run out on you, and you will no longer be able to get your 300-mile-an-hour Koenigsegg supercar. They've sold out.
Okay, what kind of supercar?
Koenigsegg, Koenigsegg.
If I knew what that was, I might be disappointed that I can't get one.
You are disappointed that you can't get one. It's a very nice car. Now, it costs $3 million, but that's not...
That is more than twice as much as I normally spend on a car.
Put it on the Visa.
More than twice, folks. Wink, wink. Do you get it?
It's yes.
Yeah, you got it. I'm glad.
Yes, Steve. We did get it.
Who produces that?
Koenigsegg.
Oh, I've never heard of it.
Yeah, it's because their cars cost $3 million. It's a little bit above my price range.
Yeah, so I don't necessarily go in circles of people who can afford to buy one, is what you're saying.
It generates 3,000 pounds of downforce when at speed. It is 1,600 horsepower.
Well, what do you need a car like that? How fast does this thing go?
300 miles an hour.
How fast do they go in NASCAR?
Where do you drive
this
thing?
There's nowhere. Maybe the Salt Flats at Bonneville you could. But for reference, the F1 cars will get to maybe 215, 220.
What's an F1 car?
The Formula One, the open-wheel race cars, NASCAR cars.
There are people rolling their eyes when I ask that question.
NASCAR cars maybe not even this year because they cut down on power there, but NASCAR cars maybe hitting 200 miles an hour on some of the super speedways. 300, unheard of. I don't know where
is this made?
Koenigsegg is, I think it's Swedish. It's Sweden.
Man.
125.
Can they drive on the Autobahn with those in Germany?
It's road.
There's no speed limit.
You can get it in a road version and a track version.
How much fuel does this thing use to go down to Piggly Wiggly?
Well, I will tell you that it has a 1,600 horsepower 5.0-liter twin turbocharged V8, features a revolutionary light speed.
That doesn't answer my question.
I don't know. I think it's a gas saving engine, but that's all relative when you have 1,600 horsepower.
And if you've got a $3 million car, you don't care. I'm wondering how often you have to fill up once you put the pedal to the metal.
Yeah.
All right. No answers there, Steve. Thank you. Thanks for nothing on that one.
You're welcome.
All right, folks. That's all the time we have for today's issues. We have more great programming directly ahead on the American Family Radio Network. And Lord willing, we will see you tomorrow for more today's issues. Bye for now.